What up, nerds? It me, old buddy Ben from theconguy.com. I'm just popping in here at the beginning of episode 198 to give you a little announcement, a little PSA, if you will. We had a few technical difficulties while we were taping this show on set. But yeah, just those first 6-7 minutes, with the exception of Katie's con update, the sound's just going to be a little bit echoey and a little garbly. But other than that, we have a great show for you. This is part two of our movies of 1984. And enjoy.
This is the Con Guy Show. We are your home for news, opinions, and interviews from the world of Comic Cons and fandoms. Your ultimate insiders for all things con.
Welcome back to the Con Guy Show, coming to you straight from the heart of Hollywood, California. We are a show where we, as filmmakers and fans, and you know, we just love all this stuff. We are diving into the world of Comic-Cons, fan events, films, and pop culture. And this week, it's all about 1984. This is part two of our deep dive into the films of 1984. I am one of the founders of the Con Guy.
You're the mascot.
I'm the mascot. It's my big old fat face on the front.
Hey,
the Con Guy. My name is Jim Fry, and we have a lot of other folks here with us today.
Hey, everyone. I am Katie, a.k.a. Katie Christine, one of the con girls, with Danae, who will introduce herself in a moment. Also, just all around nerd. We're talking about my favorite films from 1984 tonight. My wardrobe doesn't give it away at all. And then... You guys can figure it out.
Is that Edward Scissorhands?
I don't know. Also a great movie, though. Like, okay. And I'm a costumer, and I part-time adult, full-time nerd.
What's up, everybody? I'm another con girl, Danae Sams, half of the Samblings, coming in here. I am a comedian and writer based right here in Los Angeles, the filmmaking capital of the world. And I'm so excited to talk more of these 1984 films tonight. What a fantastic year.
They're old now.
I wasn't alive yet, but I have it on good authority. It was a great year.
Derek, how old are they?
Well, 2024 minus 1984, you get the number 40.
So that's an old number?
It's a very old number.
Wow.
Nigh ancient.
Yep. Well, yeah, anyway, hi, I'm Derek. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ConGuyDerek. I'm a writer and a middle school teacher. And yes, I was born in 1984. So I am as old as these movies.
So old. You know, the thing that I have in common with these movies is it's twofold. One, I am the same age as them, and two, they still look just as good as I do. So, you know, it's a thing. And Derek as well. Like, I don't want to leave him out. Look at this guy.
Show us your biceps, boy.
I'm wearing a jacket.
We need some numbers. We need some viewers.
Get them views. Get them clicks. But as Jim said, tonight we're talking about the movies of 1984. This is part two. Check the link down below to see part one of this episode that we aired last week. If you're listening online, just go like scroll up one. Right?
Yeah. You should be able to find it.
Minimal work.
Very minimal. You just use the wheel on the mouse there and you should be good. Unless you're on your phone, I guess. But anyway. Jim, what is our next movie from 1984 that we're going to be talking about?
We are going to talk about a cool movie, but first, we have one more person.
Cheeseman.
I forget about
he's on the couch chair thing.
What's up, everybody? Cheeseman here, one of the founding con guys. Also screenwriter, filmmaking. So mixing the nerd and the love of filmmaking together. And we always love to talk about the cinematography, the acting, all the aspects of it as filmmakers here in Hollywood.
All right. So, Ben, really quickly, I forgot one other thing. Not only did I forget cheese on the couch, but I also forgot our convention update.
Oh,
which is coming from Katie.
Hey, everyone. Katie here for this week's convention update for March 15th through 18th. This week, we got a lot of a variety and almost 30 conventions. You can find the entire list of this week's events on theconguy.com, including links for more information. This week, I have chosen some conventions that are near and dear to the locations and or interests of my fellow Con Guy team or myself. So first up is something every single one of the con guy is, a 90s kid. But if you are particularly a 90s kid from Connecticut, there is a 90s con, March 15th through 17th at the Connecticut Convention Center. It's sure to be, I quote, the raddest celebration this side of the millennium. But 90s isn't all we have coming this week for you Vegas horror fans. Be sure to check out Days of the Dead happening March 15th through 17th. You can see great horror makers such as Greg Nicotero and many more at the Plaza Hotel and Casino. And for more horror content, please make sure you check out our other network, The Scare Guy, for anything horror related at events based here in Southern California, where we also interviewed Greg Nicotero. Next up, this one's for you California West Coast folks, better yet, my hometown, Fresno. And this is for you anime nerds. This weekend we have Anime Con 12.0 at the Fresno Fairgrounds. So head to the big Fresno Fair, maybe get some good food, and then check out some great anime content on March 16th and 17th. Next up we have something for you brick masters and enthusiasts. This one is also because of Con Guy Derek, who is our resident Lego fan. Lover, I should say. If you love Lego also, please check out Orlando Brick Convention at Osceola Heritage Park in Kissimmee, Florida, March 16th and 17th. And last but not least, we are heading to Ohio, home state of Con Guy Luke Cheeseman and the Columbus Toy and Game Show. Check out this one-day event on March 17th at the Ohio Expo Center and State Fair in Columbus, Ohio. Once again, I am Katie Kawamoto, aka Katie Christine, with theconguy.com. Make sure you grab yourself a ticket to any of these conventions, as well as the almost 30 conventions nationwide, including one in Canada and one in Paris. For this full list, including the links, once again, please check out theconguy.com for more information. This has been the convention update from March 15th through 18th, 2024. See you next time.
Jim, what are the following movies?
Here we go.
What did you not cover?
So we are in the year 1984, and as we all know, May 8th was Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. June was a giant month with Star Trek III, Search for Spock, Ghostbusters, Gremlins, and Karate Kid. Then July, we moved into the Never-Ending Story. I know, it's so beautiful. But we're going to move into the second part of this discussion right now. So, July. We were in July 20th with this Never-Ending Story. 1 month after July, a big movie. Cheeseman, I know this is a big movie for you over there. A big movie showed up and forever changed the way that we view AI. It was James Cameron's Terminator on July 26th. All right, guys, let's talk about it.
Yes. So remember, we are playing a drinking game along with our movies of 1984. If you have seen this movie, doesn't matter when, where, or how, in what format, if you've seen it at all, take a drink. You can play along at home, just not if you're driving.
Yes, indeed.
All right. Who's seen The Terminator 1984?
Cheers. There we go.
Indeed. All right. So interesting thing about Terminator, James Cameron actually used to be a truck driver, mm-hmm. and it was part of his inspiration to write Terminator. I believe, unless I'm mistaken, and Jim, you can fact check me on Google right now as I'm saying this. So I'm going to
do it. I'm going to do it.
I'm going to vamp while you're doing this. But what I've been told, and I believe what I've read in the past, is that James Cameron was making his living as a truck driver, and as he was truck driving, he would write The Terminator.
You are correct. As he was a truck driver, he would spend his time on the road thinking up screenplay ideas.
Oh. I've never known that before.
But there's very much, in the first, especially in the first Terminator movie, there is a truck driver vibe. Like, there is that going on. And then also, so many people associate the line, I'll be back, you know, with The Terminator.
I'll be back.
And he turns around and then he drives a car into the
You know, station. Interesting fact, that line was originally going to be, I'll come back.
Ah.
And then he changed it to, I'll be back, and it became very iconic somehow.
Yeah. James Cameron quit his truck driving job in 1978 and raised money at that point from a local dentist to produce his first 35 millimeter film.
Wow.
Guys, don't give up on your day job. It's funny. I mean, like, don't give up if you're still in a day job that's not your dream.
Wait, Ben, okay. Did you have more about that story?
No, that's it.
Something I love about the Terminator is just how much, like, technology you see. It's like, it's 1984, but they're like, look at how reliant we are on technology.
Right.
Already 40 years ago.
Yeah.
With no hint of iPhones or Wi-Fi yet, but we see, you know, big trucks picking up trash and putting it away. The street sweepers kind of like as a way to say, like, oh, the robots, they're coming.
Yeah, there's some smart directing with that in the first movie and in the second movie where you see just all this machinery going on. And there's just this interesting juxtaposition from where you see, like, the future with the war with the machines. And then it shows, like, the present, what was present then, where there's, like, some, you know, like a garbage truck lifting up the dumpster and you've got the robotic arms and everything. Mm-hmm. It is really interesting. And then, of course, the bar that Sarah Connor tries to hide in when she knows somebody's after her is called Tech Noir.
Basically, which, you know, I gotta say, is a great technology. Move. If somebody's after you, he can get into a crowded space with a lot of people.
Unless that person is a futuristic, superpowered cyborg.
Then it's probably not a great idea.
It's not gonna help.
But how are you gonna know that right off the bat when he looks so human?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, can you really say that Arnold Schwarzenegger looks human?
Human-ish.
He looks superhuman. Superhuman, to be honest. Let me ask you guys this, because this is one of the biggest movies on the list right now from 1984, The Terminator. Culturally, what's the impact this movie has had on culture, and has it had, like, this lasting impact that we're gonna? I mean, how many sequels have we had?
Well, a billion. Exactly one.
I mean, for one thing.
Oh, there you go.
Only one sequel. For one thing, it elected a governor of California.
Mm-hmm. It did.
Yeah.
And to Derek's point, the sequel was the very first movie, I think, Terminator 2, that crossed $100 million in its budget. Mm-hmm. It was, like, one of the most expensive movies ever made. It was one of the first movies that used that extensive use of CGI, like all the...
And I feel like Terminator 2 is talked about so much more than Terminator 1.
Yeah.
Because I think of all the shows that parody it, like Bob's Burgers and Rick and Morty, they're not parodying... Mm-hmm. Anything from Terminator. It's Terminator 2 with, like, the War of the Machines and the explosion at the beginning of the story that they're talking about.
To be fair, honestly, like, you watch Terminator and Terminator 2 side by side, and T2 blows the first one out of the water.
Yes.
Yeah.
special effects, everything.
That was the one that was watched the most in our house. So when I was a child, I was confused when people were like, the Terminator, the bad guy. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He's saying John Connor.
But that's how I thought, because as a kid, like, we saw the Terminator 2 because Meemaw had taped that one off of TV. But we hadn't seen the first one for a very long time. I saw it as an adult, I think, like, 12 years ago for the first time.
Same season.
Because I'm so old that 12 years ago I was an adult.
Well, and there's the visual effects. I just remember watching. I remember when I was in my 20s at some point, watching the first Terminator movie, and there's the scene where the gas truck explodes, and that's the first time you see him without any skin on, because it all gets burned off in the gas truck explosion. Yeah. And he comes walking out, and it's this janky, weird looking stop motion animation of the Terminator. And I was just like, this is terrible. You watch the second movie and the T-1000, the CGI. But the great thing about the first Terminator movie is that it gave us the second Terminator movie, which is one of, I'd say, the greatest movies, you know, one of the greatest action movies, if not one of the greatest movies of all time.
I feel like with the Terminator, because, like, I've seen the Terminator, haven't seen it recently. And again, it was another movie that I've probably seen bits and pieces of multiple times in my life. But and everybody I know who is a massive fan of the Terminator franchise is always mentioning T2 and in high regards. Like, never once have I heard someone not say good things about it. I know I've seen it at one point, but, like I said, it's not a movie I watch regularly. But I think the reason why it's so iconic is because in that 80s, 90s time, those types of movies were all very, very popular. With robots, with sci-fi. It was very much one of the main genres at the time. It kind of, I feel like it kind of kickstarted it, right? Because most of the ones came out in, like, the 90s. But who's not, like, doesn't like robots and AI and, like, all this different...
And being terrified of it.
Yeah. And it also, I feel like we can't glaze over female characters in Terminator that are iconic in themselves.
Sarah Connor yeah. and Ripley mm-hmm. from Aliens, the two strongest characters I think ever in
absolutely
female characters ever in genre mm-hmm. ever in films.
Yeah.
And I get tired of us overlooking them because mm-hmm. they are like kick ass all the way.
As yeah. Mm-hmm. When both of them go on a journey, there's not like that where people talk about the Mary Sue, like Sarah Connor is, you know, she's a regular person.
She's not a Mary Sue at all.
No, yeah, like, but she, like, when she knows what the danger is, she trains and gets yep. really tough and rises to the occasion. And she's amazing.
Yes.
And like to this day, there's still a lot of writers that don't know how to write strong mm-hmm. female characters mm-hmm. that could learn a thing or two from Terminator because of Sarah Connor and yep. because of Ripley.
Wait, James Cameron was not involved with the first Aliens, right? With
he did. Well, Alien was Ridley Scott,
right?
Ridley Scott. Aliens
1986 was James Cameron. Cheese Man,
yeah. I definitely have a thing to say about the Terminator movies. I have come as a filmmaker to appreciate them as almost like they're the same series but different films. The first Terminator is much more like an art house, like horror movie,
yeah.
And the way that you know you interact with the it's done in more of a, like a horrifying way, where T2 is more of like what is became great as the action adventure type thing at like Blockbuster, you know, like they had the different sections and all that. So it was just that big commercial, like in the Terminator, the whole thing seemed like, I mean, the T-1000 is a scary character, but it felt like that larger than life, like cinema experience, where the first one had more of that art house kind of feel. So like as a filmmaker, I've come to appreciate them as separate things, but again, like Ben said, you know, it gave us T2, and it was what is known as one of the only movies out there where the sequel is better than the first film, you know, in some ways if you look at it that way, which is a rare thing. And Scream 2 made that reference.
Okay, let's talk about this next movie, because this next movie is, I don't think this next movie is as much of a cultural touchstone mm-hmm. as it is just, it's kind of cool that this movie is in 1984. August 10th in the summer of 84, Revenge of the Nerds. Revenge of the Nerds. The reason I'm putting it in there, okay, is I feel as if in this last 10 years, we have had the ascendance of the nerds. The geeks have inherited the earth. Comic-Con has become this driving force in pop culture. Right, Ben?
I mean, I'd say it's been the last 15 to 16 years.
Okay, yeah.
You know, it was since the era of Twilight and Iron Man.
2009 with Twilight, Iron Man 2008
with yep. Iron Man. I love
that you know when Twilight came out, Jim.
It just so frustrated me when I was at Comic-Con. Sorry, let's go.
Well, it was the year that really launched San Diego Comic-Con into the stratosphere. Mm.
True,
and,
true.
And yep. so there has been, I think it was Zach Levi and others who said the geek have inherited the earth. And so as we're looking back on 1984 to see the movie Revenge of the Nerds,
raunchy movie.
Oh, very raunchy. So Revenge of the Nerds, for me as a kid growing up in the early 90s in a rural good old boy community, as I think most of us kind of grew up in those kinds of yep. type of communities, but it was always like there was all this handful of movies that were like, if you can, you know, if you're a 10-year-old boy, if you can see this, you know, that's something sneaky that you've done. And it was like Revenge of the Nerds, Animal House, and yep. Porky's.
Porky's,
you know,
1982.
Like, that was like the trinity of like dirty movies that you would never be able to see unless you got real, you know,
sneaky.
And so Revenge of the Nerds kind of holds that place for me. I don't know if I don't think I've still ever actually sat down and watched this film in its entirety. I think I've seen parts of it on an edited for TV format. I think I might have seen it here and there, but I don't think I've ever actually sat down and watched Revenge of the Nerds.
Anyways, Revenge of the Nerds is the reason that I think this movie is significant, because it finally recognized the fact that there was the nerds society. You know, back in the 80s, everything, cheerleader, the football player, you know, the Breakfast Club. Well,
yeah, and then there was the one nerd, the guy with the tape on his glasses, yep. the George McFly, if you will.
Yep.
You know, and it was just the one, but you're saying at this point it was acknowledging that there was a subculture of this.
There was a subculture of people, and not just because they had tape on their glasses, but because they weren't like the football players. They weren't like the soccer players. They were the theater camp people. They were the marching band people. They were the rest of us. They were the rest of us. And that's what was cool about this movie. It was the rest of us got this movie and said, hey, yeah, we're cool too. It was a raunchy movie. It wasn't like a great movie, but I just think it was a cool moment in society where the rest of us got our point across, like, hey, we're here too.
I would never point to Revenge of the Nerds and say, this is a very well-written film.
It's terrible. It's such a rocks finish.
I've never seen this movie.
You don't need to see it.
But I'm still hung up on the fact that you were like, the band kids and the theater kids are like, we're cool too. And thinking about how I was a theater kid in the 2000s and I was not cool even in the 2000s.
No, but we were cool to each other.
Okay, yeah, that's fair.
As much as I like to say it, it's like this was perhaps the beginning of nerd geek culture because there were like four of these Revenge of the Nerd movies, none of them great, but it just kind of recognized the fact that, hey, there's another class of people existing that we're not the jocks. We're not the cheerleaders. We're not the whatevers, you know?
Was this the one where they like put the snake in the plumbing or something?
Probably. I don't remember that at all.
I remember seeing something.
I love that we're all experts here. All
right. Yeah, none of us have seen this
Revenge
movie
of the,
since 1987.
I've seen this movie a very long time ago. I did not take a movie theaters because I was too young for them, but that was August 10th, Revenge of the Nerds. But
November 16th, 1984 was when we got an iconic character, Freddy Krueger. Hmm. Obviously, I like Freddy Krueger and Nightmare on Elm Street.
She's wearing.
So, yeah, I didn't see this movie till a few years ago. I say a few years ago, but that means like within the last 10 years, in case anybody's wondering. Because I didn't grow up watching horror.
There was a pandemic, so it warps all sense
exactly,
of time.
Exactly. But I've seen all the, you know, or tried to see most of the slashers from the 80s. And I feel like everybody has their own one that they love more than the rest. Freddy is mine. Terrifying me. Oh, yeah. Like, I love this movie. I've only seen it twice because it is terrifying. Like, I have to be okay with being scared and being okay with like
look at
watching
what
it.
She's weary though to be such a saw it twice.
But yeah, but
dreaming of you.
Because the thing that was so terrifying to me about Freddy is you're sleeping when he attacks you. Yep. That's terrifying. You can't do anything about it. It was pretty graphic for an 80s movie, I think.
No, it was 1984. Freddy, the very first Freddy, when the girl got spun up in the air and her stomach was being sliced open, it was super graphic. It was very graphic.
But my favorite part in Nightmare on Elm Street is when the mom gets turned into an inflatable doll and pulled through the... No, it's the 1980s effects of like at the end of the film, spoiler alert, if you didn't see this film 40 years ago, it seems like everything is okay and it was all a dream and they start to drive away and the car turns into Freddy Krueger and the mom is waving from the porch and then like the arm reaches through and grabs her and then in the next shot, it's an inflatable doll. Like it's pulled through like the window and the door. I laughed.
That's getting
so
turned
hard
into
in
an inflatable
movie.
Doll is frightening. I'm sure.
That would be
to be fair. The reason why Freddy to me is my favorite because in most of the slasher films that everybody knows and loves, the main slasher is not the main focus of their first film. Mm-hmm. And with Freddy, he is the villain from the get go.
Something I do love about like Nightmare on Elm Street, though, is that you find out the story behind Freddy Krueger is that he basically murdered people. Mm-hmm. He got off on a technicality, and all the parents in the town were like, "We're not gonna have this," and they just went and killed the guy.
Yeah, like, he victimized children, and so like the parents in the town were like, "No, we're not gonna let this guy.
We're not gonna let him get away with it." Just vigilante justice, but unfortunately, he came back.
In a way, you don't want to say that you're for that,
But there is a little, there's a tad bit of satisfaction with knowing, like, at the
parents. And also, it's
the
like
parents were not going to let this guy keep on victimizing their children.
Exactly. And also, like, that means that character was always a villain. It's not like he was like with Jason. There's almost this thing where, like, he was allowed to drown because the counselors were messing around.
He was innocent.
Like, Freddy has no right to go after revenge. Like, he was always evil. He was the bad guy. So,
like, to a certain point, you can be like, well, you know, Jason's kind of justified in his actions. So this next movie, November 25th, Supergirl, was a movie I would say that perhaps. Okay, wait.
It doesn't matter that my glasses.
Let's see. Who has seen it? No. Okay.
Sorry.
I
know it exists.
I'm going to take a drink. I watch it on, like, video sometime. Here we go.
They used AI to replicate it in the Flash movie.
Did they really?
Yeah.
Right.
They were.
Did anybody here see the Flash?
No. Yes, I love the Flash one.
Absolutely not. The new Flash movie.
The new Flash movie
with Ezra Miller and Michael Keaton.
I thought it was great.
I for me, it's Batman 3.
It is personally. It's the best of the that era of the WB superhero movies.
But when they're going through time and they show, like, the Nicolas Cage Superman and all these,
he looks so weird.
He looks really weird. But there was a shot of Supergirl in there, the 1984 Supergirl. I don't remember that. Very briefly. I never saw the movie. I saw the Chris Reeves Superman movies.
Movie, and I'll be honest with you, I think it was a very disposable movie. It's in here. It's 40 years old. But the biggest cultural resonance that we can kind of talk about today is the fact that there's a new Supergirl coming out. Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow, is taking flight with House of the Dragon star Millie Alcock. Have you guys been watching House of the Dragon?
Yeah.
Love House of the Dragon.
So James Gunn is coming up with a new Supergirl. And so let's just say I have a feeling, I have full confidence that this is going to be a much more better. It sounds terrible. Much more better movie than the previous one.
I mean, and they haven't really done Supergirl dirty, I don't think, because the TV show with Melissa Benoist.
Yes.
Was good. You know, all of those Arrowverse, CW, kind of DC Universe shows were, they all had their high points and were pretty good overall. And then, of course, the young actress that played Supergirl in The Flash, Sasha Calle, I thought she was excellent. Very different take, of course, brunette, Latina, not the blue eye, blonde hair, all American kind of, you know, typical Supergirl, but very compelling character. And now we're going back to the original kind of blue-eyed, blonde-haired character with a great actress under the tutelage of a great universe builder in James Gunn. I'm looking forward to it.
December 5th.
Jim, I have three words for you.
Yes.
Spice must flow.
Yeah, let's talk about it. What are we talking about, Ben?
Dune, of course, the longest sci-fi book ever written. Maybe not, but continue.
Maybe, but it feels like it. So there was this version of the movie. Of course, there was a more recent one. We're getting part two this year. But this one that came out in 1984 had Patrick Stewart. Sting was in there. He shows up later as, like, this assassin. And when he first shows up, he's in, like, this leather Speedo looking outfit or something. It's weird.
There's also the famous actor guy from Twin Peaks.
There you go.
That
you
guy.
Go. Yeah.
That guy.
And you can tell it, like, it has very much an 80s sci-fi look and feel to it.
Yeah.
And the guy that plays the main character, Paul, was in some stuff later. He had a recurring role in How I Met Your Mother, the captain.
The captain. Yeah.
That's the guy from Twin Peaks, right?
Yeah. So there's such a huge cheese factor with the visual effects and everything, but at the same time, it's also just fun sci-fi. If you're a fan of the book, then the older movie will never measure up, I'm sure, in that way, unless you've just got a special place in your heart for it because you love 80s sci-fi.
So yeah. let me ask you this. For those of you who have seen the first half of Dune, the new Dune, how was the new Dune stacking up to the original 1984?
That one
Dune?
With Timothy Cheddarbiscuit?
Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
Timothy
Chalamet. Well, the thing, I think people who aren't friends that I've talked to who don't know the book, some people, at least my wife, wasn't a big fan of the newer movie, probably because it takes its time a little bit more.
I'll tell you this. People thought the movie took its time. Mm-hmm. Have you ever picked up a copy of the book? It's like a cinder block.
Yeah.
I haven't read it, but I use it as a self-defense weapon.
Right, exactly. You carry one of those on you, you don't have to worry about being mugged.
Exactly. It's intricate. And it's like, it's the kind of sci-fi where it's very paradigm shifting. You think about like where humanity could be if we last for, you know, this long into the future.
I'm Gekokino. That's all I remember from the movie.
Do you remember
that? You lost me.
So that's December 14th. So that's the year of 1984. Real quick, Katie, before we end, we have a couple of like, bonus features. Yes. March 9th, Splash.
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, this probably would go under the cult classics category. I think.
I would agree.
Yeah, it's I would think so.
I mean, this movie changed the name Madison forever.
That's true.
Oh, it is.
That is like, that is a huge cultural impact. Before this film,
Madison was a boy's name. Mm-hmm. Now that is exclusively.
But I also say this movie saved the Walt Disney Company. It turned it into just a children's movie company into a broad, you know, adult.
And now they've edited it over the butt crack.
And aren't they remaking it? Or...
Are you serious?
On Disney Plus, at the end when she runs back into the ocean and you can see her bare butt, they animated hair.
Aren't they making a sequel or a remake or something?
Well, they did her. I'm thinking of Overboard. They did a remake of Overboard.
I feel like I could be wrong. I could
similar
be wrong.
Concept. Confused
all of that. Similar I could be wrong. Concept.
Splash is coming.
But I mean, it had such iconic scenes that if you did watch it when you were younger, you're gonna remember it because it's a mermaid movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, and I love mermaids, so I had to give it a shout out just because.
And this it was Tom Hanks too.
Yeah. And this was a full on at least. When did Little Mermaid come out? 88?
89.
89 was Little Mermaid. This is 84.
This is a full five. This is a half decade before The Little Mermaid.
And it is the movies. We can make fun of all you want, but like it did change the way that Disney distributed movies.
Absolutely.
It was one of the first movies of Touchstone, the new Disney mainstream movies. Like they had just released like kiddie movies before that. And they said, hey, we need to get into like more mainstream movies for broad audiences. And so Touchstone was created and Splash was the movie that kind of made them famous with Tom Hanks and Daryl Hannah. All right. Mm-hmm. Then we had March 16th, Ice Pirates.
Oh, the Ice Pirates. So Ice Pirates, I have a very brief story about this. I, in a different life, I lived in Wichita, Kansas, and I worked at a motorcycle dealership. And there was a guy a few years older than me named O'Brien. That was his first name. And he told me, dude, he quoted something. And I was like, what's that from? He's like, dude, you've never seen Ice Pirates? And I was like, no. Why would I have seen Ice Pirates? And he's like, oh, you got to check it out. So I rented it and I watched it. And I was like, this is the greatest shittiest movie I've ever seen. Like it's just fun.
Yeah.
It's stupid and it's just a joy to watch it. And I remember almost nothing about this movie except I remember they're in a desert on a giant vehicle that's like made of an animal skeleton or something. I don't know. But it's so fun. I just remember having a blast.
Have any of the rest of you seen Ice Pirates?
No,
I think I've heard of it,
but
I am aware of it, but I have not seen. All right. Last two movies from May of 1984. Derek,
well, I didn't have one from May.
Oh, wait,
but I was going to mention. It's funny. You should mention a character named O'Brien because I was going to talk about the movie 1984 based on the George Orwell classic starring John Hurt, released October 10th. And it's a good thing they released it in 1984 because that was the title. And also, it's completely ceased to be relevant since then.
All right. Last. Nothing to do with that anymore.
Last thing we avoided that.
Right.
May the 4th, we were introduced to the lovely, all just the beautiful Molly Ringwald in 16 Candles, a movie which some have found favor with and some have found problems with, but you know what? It is still a movie we talk about to this day. 16 Candles, John Hughes.
There is something to say about all so many movies that came out in the 60s, 70s, 80s that were impactful, that they were a product of their time.
Yeah.
And if they were impactful, they were impactful for the right reasons, despite the things that we look back on now and say, oh, that was inappropriate. Well, right. At the time it wasn't. Or they, you know, it wasn't looked upon in the same way that we do now.
Yeah.
So I will never fault a movie. Like, we watched Monster Squad a while ago. Monster Squad. It's like,
are you going to tell me it's an offense? It's offensive.
Well, they use words in there that kids in the 80s would have called each other that
Nard.
We don't find appropriate now. And they're a product of their time, but that doesn't mean the positive aspects of them are any less positive. It just means we need to be aware of what we're watching and what era it's from.
That's right.
Are you saying we should practice discernment when we take in entertainment?
Heavens no. We should criticize everything. And
can we not pretend like we today are the first people of history and then everything that must exist right now is according to how we feel things should be? There's this thing called 40 years ago, and it was great then.
Well, you know what? Somebody, it's 2024 right now. Somebody's going to listen to this in 2044.
If we're lucky.
No one will remember.
And they're going to be like, I can't believe they were talking about this.
All right, last movie.
By somebody, you mean Luke's mom.
Yeah. Have you guys heard of, it was also 1984, The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension. Has anyone heard of this movie, Derek?
Yes, I've seen it. My mom used to talk about it and quoted it to us. You remember this, right?
No.
Okay, well.
It's a terrible movie.
It's dumb. I saw it eventually, and I was like, why did my mom have anything positive to say about this? But you know, Temple of Doom is her favorite Indiana Jones movie. So
I am aware of this movie, but I have never actually watched it.
I know. It's just one of those movies. I saw this in the movie theater with my dad, and I remember at the time I was young, thinking, oh my gosh, it's such a stupid movie. Yeah. I just can't believe that thing was made. But I tried to make myself like it. Yes.
You know, I don't think my mom praised the movie itself. I think she used to quote one line from it because it was dumb, but strangely insightful, where the guy was like talking about somebody that gave him this advice. And it is, wherever you go, there you are.
I thought that was a Yogi Bearism.
It sort of sounds like it.
Right. All right, guys. Yeah. Listen. Can we just say that 40 years later, we're still talking about this movie? So yeah. There's something it did right. Maybe it did a whole lot wrong, and that's what it did right. Anyways, thank you guys for joining us this week. This is the part two of our 1984 discussion. Actually, the discussion of the movies of 1984, which is probably one of the best geek years ever. Derek?
One more thing. Not a movie, but the original Macintosh computer. So it was a great year for nerds.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for joining us this week. My name is Jim Fry. You can catch me here on theconguy.com. Also, you can follow me on James D. Fry on Instagram.
Hey, everyone. I'm Katie, aka Katie Christine. Happy to have talked about all these wonderful movies from 1984. You should watch some of these if you haven't watched them. You don't have to see some of the movies that take place in 1984 that are not as good as these movies. If you know, you know. So you can find me on social media, Twitch, TikTok, Instagram, X. I think that's everything. I don't know. If it exists, I want Threads also at KT_Christine.
Thanks so much, guys. This has been awesome. I'm having the best time just talking movies in person with you all. But my name is Danae Sams. I am a writer and comedian based in here in LA. You can find me on TikTok at Danae Sams, as well as on Instagram at DNAYS. That's where I will put on all info about upcoming stand-up shows.
Well, thank you, everybody. Everybody here and everybody watching or listening. This has been really fun. I love that we can do this in person again. My name is Derek. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ConGuyDerek and right here on The Con Guy Show and TheConGuy.com.
And I'm Cheeseman. You can find me on X and on Instagram at CheeseOnCouch and also TheConGuy.com.
All right. And everybody, my name is Ben Cleaver. You can find me on all social media at BenKlieWer. That spells Cleaver. Hard to spell, easy to say. And I'm on all the socials. I'm taking a break from X or Twitter. But
whatever that is.
I've pinned a post on there. So if you go there, but I'm the same across all social medias. Thank you so much for tuning in to The Con Guy for our part two of our 1984, as Jim said. And we'll see you all on the next show. And remember, everybody, the reason I'm drinking out of this red cup is because whenever Ben Cleaver shows up, it's always a party.
Good night, everybody.
Thanks for watching The Con Guy, the official program of TheConGuy.com. Find us on the Weebie Geeks Collective or anywhere you listen to podcasts.